So we're now on Hey Hey, Amud Aleph, and we have a Gemara that we're not going to spend too much time on. We'll just quickly run through and mention a couple of points in passing, and hopefully we'll spend the bulk of our time on the source for Pikuach Nefesh issue that appears starting on the bottom of the page. So I think maybe for reasons of time, I'll read through the sources here. So we say Misha Nafal Alav Mapoles, Maika Amar. So what exactly are we saying? Lo mibaya kamar. Lo mibaya safik husham, safik enosham. Not only a case of where it's not clear if he's there or not. De'i ise chayhu de'mefachim, where if he's there, we know he would be alive, that we say that we do pikuach nefesh, we do whatever is necessary on Shabbos to save their life. El afilu safik chay, safik meis mefachim. Even if it's unclear if the person under this rebel is alive or dead, we also do pikuach nefesh. And not only in a case where it's Yisrael that we know is the person who Safik Chai Safik Kusi Safik Yisrael Mefachin. Even if it's a scenario where the person is either a Kusi or a Yisrael, we still do Pikuach Nefesh. So just reading this Gemara, it's a little ambiguous as to whether we're stacking the cases or not, right? We're saying not only case A, but also case B. Not only case B, but also case C. Is when we say the not onlys, is it that, like, it's all three scenarios? We're not sure if the person's alive or dead. We're not sure if they're Yisrael or Kusi. We're not sure if there's anywhere there or not. All three of those are together? Or is it three separate cases? We're saying not only case A, but case B, which is even, you know, even less of a reason to worry, and we still worry, we still do Pikuach Nefesh, and even case C, where there's the least reason. It's a little unclear how to read the Gemara. The Meiri, source number two, comes in and says pretty clearly that it's Afilun itstaref bo safek acher. He's saying it's stacking the different sfekos, building on top of each other. What we end up with is a sfeka, right? A triple safek, 12.5% if you're doing your 50% math, right? That's what it sounds like. And that gets into a bit of a discussion in some of the sources that were on yesterday's handout. Today they were in gray. That's discussed there. Right? And so the Magid Mishnah and the Lechem Mishnah on the Rambam discuss this. The Magid Mishnah says, based on this Gemara, and I'll take questions in a minute, he says, Afilu Sveik Sveika, Gon Safik Yesh Adam Im Lav, Bim Yesh, etc. And he seems to read that in to our Gemara, like the Meiri did. And he says, V'Rabbeinu, the Rambam, Lo Chashash Lahazkir Zeh, V'Pnei Sheyazkir B'Samuch, V'Afilu Tisha Ovdei Kochavim Mazalos, V'Echad Yisrael Mefachim. The Rambam, he says, doesn't need to mention this scenario, Sveik Sveika, because if the Rambam thinks that 9-1 against the odds, right, 9-1 Kusi to Yisrael, you do Pikuach Nefesh, the Rambam would also say that by a Sfeik Sveika, Safik, is there anyone there? And Safik, if it's Yisrael or Akum, the Rambam would say there too, you would do it as well. What do people think about that Magid Mishnah? They agree with that logic or not? Well, why would you say that? Why would you connect Sveik Sveika to 9-1 odds? Torah.
When we were specifically speaking in Seder with you about how we don't do this, but, like, I guess you could connect it in terms of, like, once you have one Sveik and then another Sveik, then, like, it's more unlikely.
Right. So, I mean, in general, let's say in Isurim, we say Sveik Sveika is mutter, right? If you have something, you're not sure, I don't know, you're not sure if it's not kosher or not, and even if it's not, or what's a better way of doing this? You're not, you have meat and milk, and you're actually not sure if this is milchic or not, number one, and you're not sure if it mixed in with the meat, something like that, right? Two suffix. So in such a case, we say sveik sveika is mutter. Why is sveik sveika is mutter? Because, well, one possible reason is you might say you're just playing the odds. It's just, sveik sveika is really just based on rov. It's based on rov tzadim, right? If you have two doubts, that's 75% mutter. So that's how Sveik Sveika works generally. If you say, it sounds like the Magid Mishnah is assuming like that, right? That's why he says, well, the Rambam doesn't need to mention Sveik Sveika, because the Rambam already says that by Sveik Sveika we still do Pikuach Nefesh, because the Rambam already says we do Pikuach Nefesh against a rove, against 9-1 odds. So 9-1 odds is basically the same thing as a Sveik Sveika. It's just bad odds against you. Now, the Lechem Mishnah seems to argue with,
can I ask a question?
Yeah, just let me finish this piece. And
Go ahead.
And yeah. So the Lechem Mishnah seems to argue with him here, and he seems to read the Gemara differently. He says every suffix is bifnei atzmo, and then he's not sure how we know about how we know about the 777. He has his own logic. I think there's an alternative approach to the Magid Mishnah about how to understand Safek. One might say Safek is not based, Safek Sveka is not necessarily based on Rove or Rove Tzadim, that most scenarios, 3 out of 4 cases, are Mutter, right? Do the math, right? With the meat and milk, right? If it's not mixed and it is milk, it's Mutter. If it's not mixed and it's not milk, it's Mutter. If it's mixed and it's not milk, it's Mutter. Only in a scenario where it's both mixed and it is milk, it's Aser, right? It's only 1 out of 4. So the same thing here, it's just Rove. That's one option. The other alternative is, I think the way the Rabbi Soloveitchik like to say it, from what I'm told, is that it's based on Rove Tzadim. It's based on the Safek not being Chal. The Safek doesn't get off the ground. Not that majority do run the numbers 3-to-1 odds. It's that in order for something to qualify as a Safek, it needs to be like close enough to actually like count as a Safek, to get off the ground, as it were. And if something, it's not that we know about, it's not that we know this is milk, and then the question is, did it mix with the meat? We don't even know if there's milk here in the first place. So how can you say that counts as an issue? That's something to worry about at all. You don't have to worry about it at all. It's not even a Safek. It's a Safek of a Safek that's so far removed, we just don't need to worry about it. And if you think of it that way, it's not based on Rove. It's a totally different factor. It's a different factor just that something is so far removed, is just so, like, it's just steps away from being reality to the point where we don't need to think about it at all. So that would be an alternative way of understanding Sveik Sveika, which seems to go against the Magid Mishnah here. Either way, we seem to go, I mean, it seems like most people agree that that we do Sveik Sveika, we still do Pikuach Nefesh in the case of Sveik Sveika. Whether you read the Gemara like that or not, whether you understand the Lumbus like the Magid Mishnah or not, in practice, Sveik Sveika, we still do Pikuach Nefesh, which is one more way of showing the severity of Pikuach Nefesh. There were some questions or thoughts, yeah?
Zoe. I think you just covered it. Of Sveik Sveika does not necessarily it doesn't inherently need to be tied to Rove. They also can be sort of separately.
Yeah. Right. So yeah. So you're machaving to the Rove. Good. Very very Boston.
I guess, but also from a share I had with a Rabbi Alman, so I don't know how Boston it is.
Okay. good. Was there another hand before that I missed or that we didn't get to? Rivka, is that a hand? Yeah.
It sounds like you answered this, but I just wanted to check. We were talking in Kavuta about whether the Eerie says that you can kind of have like 2 Sveikot, or you can have like even a bunch of them, because of the way he says like v'chein afilu nitzdarif bo safek acher. We weren't sure if that was like dafka, like if you have 1 Sveik and then there's like another one, or like no matter how far fetched it is.
Right. It sounds like the Meiri's reading the Gemara as stacking those 3 Sveikos one on top of the other. So if he thinks that, if he says it for 3, then probably he'd say it for more, there's no limit, I would guess. But yeah, I'd understand Misvara, like logically I'd understand why you distinguish between 2 and 3, maybe, 2 is close enough, 3 is, maybe 3 doesn't get off the ground, 3 is far removed, but it doesn't seem like, given how he's reading the Gemara, it doesn't seem like the Meiri goes that way. Yeah, Tehila.
Also, I was just wondering, what's your take on the last line in the Meiri, where he makes it...
We'll get there. Hold it, hold the thought, because we will get to that, but let's first move forward in the Gemara. So the Gemara says, Mitza'uhu chai mefakhim. Right? If they find him alive, then they do pikuach nefesh. Okay, that seems pretty obvious, right? Mitza'uhu chai mefakhim, pshita, lo tzricha da'afilu l'chaisha. Well, it's not obvious, because even if it's chaisha, the person's currently alive, but you know that within the next hour, let's say, they're going to die. They're going to die within the next hour. You still are Machal HaShabbos to take them out of the rubble or whatever, clear their airway, their air passages so that they can live, even if it's only for another hour. They won't recover any longer than that, just for an hour. Tehila wanted to call our attention to the Meiri, who says, "Bagtu v'chomo matzu chai mashlimim b'pikucho, afal pishin is barer she'i efshlo l'chios afilu sha'a achas." He won't even live a full hour. We still save his life. Why? In that hour, he will take the opportunity to do tshuva in his heart and say vidui and get atonement for all his averos. That's why it's worth saving the person for that last hour. So there's a whole question here. Tila, what were you thinking? Why don't you? We'll start with that, and we'll build from there.
Well, I guess we're trying to understand before we get into the content of it, like what the function of it is. Is it just explaining why there is a benefit for Chayeshah, or is it giving Svara for why we allow Chayeshah?
Yeah, so it sounds like if you just read the Meiri straight, it sounds like what he's doing is, what's the value in living one more hour? It's not going to really change this person's life. The person's essentially is going to die within an hour anyway. Why do you do it? And the only value, the only justification is he's going to get a lot done in that hour. Specifically, he's going to do tshuva and reorient his whole life around God or whatever, however you want to formulate that. And that's really our goal is here, right? And the life itself is not worth too much. An hour of life is not worth too much. The potential for tshuva is worth a lot. That's really what we're doing.
Right, and then we were also wondering how that would work, like, on a more, like, mechanical level, because we were just trying to think, like, how it fits in terms of the drasha. So you're definitely not saving him so that he'll get to live another Shabbos.
So can you hold that thought? Sorry, when we get to the drashas, we'll raise this again, okay? Is that okay?
Yeah.
So hold that thought. It will complicate the drashos a lot. Before we get there, it's just worth mentioning Rabbeinu Yehonasan also, and source 14, the Rimi Lunil, also seems to say this idea, Bahahi Shata Yakir Boro Visvada al Khatosav Bipe Obelev. Right? He seems to take that seriously. Chayeshah, you do tshuva, that's important. In source 15, which was in gray, so I doubt most people did it, the Chafetz Chaim raises an issue with this Meiri, which is just seems very odd. Like it sounds like, it's not really because of Pikuach Nefesh here, but I thought we do value Pikuach Nefesh. So he says This whole Meiri is a nice reason, a nice explanation. It's not the real explanation. It doesn't make a nafkamina ladina. If the person can only recover for an hour and for whatever reason they're unconscious, they're not going to do tshuva. You know they're not going to do tshuva. You save their life anyways, even violating Shabbos. So that's the Chafetz Chaim. That's how he paskin as well. And that just basically says we don't take the Meiri literally. It's a nice theory of why, an hour of life could be important, but that's not what it's really about. Fine. So yeah, we'll get back to the Meiri when we talk about the Drashos in a few minutes. Anything else, or are we good? Good. So let's move forward in the Gemara. This we're really going to run through because it's we don't really have too much that we're going to spend talk about it. The imes yanichuhu, right? If the person's dead, you don't save them. You leave them there on Shabbos. Hanami pshita, that also is obvious. There's no pikuach nefesh. So why? What's the justification for violating Shabbos? Lo tzricha, Rabbi Yehuda ben Lakish, to Amar, the Tanya, ein matzilin es hameis mipnei hadleika. Generally, we don't save a dead body from a fire. Someone's already dead. You don't move the body to save it because there's no pikuach nefesh. Amar, Rabbi Yehuda ben Lakish, shamati shematzilin es hameis mipnei hadleika. No, we do. I heard a tradition that we do save the mace. Vafilu Rabbi Yehuda ben Lakish, so Vafilu Rehudim and Lakish, Loka Amar, El Mitosha Adam Bahu Al Meso. The whole logic of Rehudim and Lakish is a person, there's a dead body of a relative of yours, you're going to care about that a lot. You're going to be all nervous about it. Ilo Sharisle Asilichabuyi. If you don't allow the person to move the body, they'll end up putting out the fire. Moving the body is just a muktzah issue. Putting out a fire is a daraisa issue. So we allow them to move the body, it's like triage, right? We're trying to save the daraisa by allowing a derabanan. That's in general. That's in the normal Shabbos case. Aval hacha, ilo sharis le maisa le mevad. What's he going to do here? If you say, don't save the life of this person, if he listens, he's not going to save the life of this, he's not going to put out a fire. There's no fire. There's no other situation. So allowing it would not save any daraisa, so there's no reason to permit it. So it's asur mi derabanan. So that's the logic there. Fine, and right that in the halacha, if someone dies on Shabbos, practically you leave them where they are. That's what's practiced as well. Fine, moving forward to the next piece. Tan Rabbanan, ad heichan hu bodek. How far do you check? Meaning you have a person collapsed under a collapsed building. How do you check if they're alive? Right, you check for vital signs. How do you do that? So, ad chotmo. One opinion is until his nose to check for breathing. Yesh omrim ad libo, check until the heart to check for a pulse. Badaku matza elyonim mesim lo yomar kfar meso atachtonim. If you check and there's a, let's say, Rachman Lutzan, you have several bodies that are piled on top of one another, you check the upper bodies, the bodies that are easily accessible, and they're not alive, right? They're mesim. You shouldn't say kfar meso atachtonim. You shouldn't say the people under also are dead. No, they may be alive. So you clear aside whatever other rubble. You check all the people who were buried under the rubble. Fine. And Masahai, there's a story, this happened. Umatsu el yonim mesim v'tachtonim chayim. Once at one time, they actually found the upper people, the people, the bodies that were on top were deceased, and the people who were underneath were alive. So it's a good reason to check. Just because the people on top are dead doesn't mean the people on the bottom are. It's still pikuach nefesh. Neima hani tanai kahani tanai. D'tanya mehechan avlad notes are meirosho. Shemar mei imi atagozi v'omer gizin nizrech vashlichi. Avashalom remi tiburo. M'shaleach sharshav elach ve'elach. So maybe we should say these two views of where you check for vital signs. Do you check from the nose? Do you check from the heart? Is tied to the machlokas as to whether, as to where a baby is starts being formed from, right? Where the source of the baby is from, that the way it develops. Does it develop first from the head or first from the belly, right? How does it grow? Sort of head down or like belly out, whatever. So maybe those are the same dispute, right? Because like the most vital signs is probably the part of the body that develops first. That's the assumption. And we reject that. We say, afilo tema abashal adkan loka amar abashal hasam el inin yitzira. It's called midi mimitziase mitzar. Avalini pikach nefesh afilo abashal modi the ikar chiyusa ve'apehu. D'chsiv klasher nesh v'rachayim ba'apav. Maybe we make a distinction. Generally, things grow. You might say things grow from the middle. So that's why the torso would be where humans are created from. But he still might agree that the main vital signs are breathing, because it says vayipach bevaj nishmas chayim vayhi adam lemsh chaya. Adam becomes a breathing being when God breathes into him, right? And so the breathing maybe is essential, even if you think babies are created first from their body. Amar of Papa, machogs mimata lamala, avo mimala lamata, kevin the banak le'ed chodmo, shuvei no tzarech. So Papa said this whole question about whether you check the nose or whether you check the heart is only if you're checking from the bottom of the body, from the legs up. So the question is, do you check just the heart or do you check the heart and then the nose? But if you're checking from the top down, mimala lamata, as soon as you check the nose, if the person's not breathing, shuvei no tzarech. You can assume that the person is dead. You don't need to check the heart. Tichsiv kol asher nishmas ruach chayim ba'apav. Again, that focus on breathing, right? Anyone who has, that's a different pasuk, but same idea, right? That with the mabul, it says anyone who had nishmas ruach chayim ba'apav, anyone who had breath in their nose, died. And anyone who didn't have breath in their nose didn't die because they were already dead, right? So the implication is that breathing determines life or death. Now, there may be a secondary factor. The heart may also tell you, that a person's alive. But the primary thing is breathing. That's the Gemara there. Not too much to add to that other than that these sources, let's say practically nowadays, our standard isn't breathing per se or heart per se. The standard is, can you bring this person back to life? That's practically how we rule. I think it was the same back in the time of the Gemara, just that they had more limited means of bringing people back to life. The one place where this Gemara comes up is in the context of brain death, where there's a question: brain dead people, they can't. Let's say they can't breathe spontaneously, but maybe their heart pumps spontaneously, right? So, question about how to treat the fact that the person is breathing through a machine. Leaving that aside, assuming that doesn't count, so then do you say, well, the heart's beating, so that's what counts, or do you say, well, they're not breathing on their own, so that's what counts in terms of whether brain dead people are considered alive or not? This is one of the main sources for that discussion. That's probably the main implication for pikuach nefesh. Otherwise, if you find the person trapped under a building, I think nowadays, if the body's not cold, if they haven't been dead for a while, you take them out and you resuscitate them, right? Because we have the ability to do that now. Even if they stop breathing and their heart stopped beating, we still have medical means to resuscitate them, right? So you would do that. Fine. So much for the early parts of our Gemara. We're now going to move to the main thing we're treating today, which is the drasha, the makor, the source for pikuach nefesh being docha Shabbos, and what we can draw from that, what implications we can draw from that. For this, I think it would be good to have a reader. Do we have a volunteer? If not, I'll just cold call someone. If you really want me to do this, fine. Hadassah, do you want to read?
Okay, could you tell me where?
Yeah, sure. Sorry, it was a bit quick before. But hopefully you all saw it in Seder and internalized it. So we're at the last skinny line. Ukvar Haya Rabbi Yishmael.
Okay. Ukvar Haya Rabbi Yishmael, Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Elazar, Ben Azaria, Mehalchim, Baderet, Ver Levi Hasadar, ורבי ישמעאל בנו של רבי אלעזר בן עזריה מהלכין אחריהם. נשאלה שאלה זו לפני מיניים בפיקוח נפש שופה את השבת.
Right, do you want to try a translation of that?
I can summarize. So there's Rabbi Yishmael and Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Elazar ben Azaria, and they were walking on a way somewhere, and behind them there was a lady and another person.
Right, Levi, Rabbi Shmuel, Benosh, Rosman, Azariah, yeah, they were there.
And they were also walking there, and then they came up with a question regarding the basis of Pikuach Nefesh Shedochei HaShabbat.
Okay, right, so how do we know, what's our source for Pikuach Nefesh Shedochei HaShabbat? We've been assuming this all along. It's certainly in our Mishnah, and the broader implications of this idea have been throughout our limud, the last 2 weeks. What's the source? So we finally get to the source here at the end of these dapim about pikuach nefesh. And so let's go through. There's seven suggestions.
או שפיכות דמים מטמא את הארץ וגורם לשכינה שתסתרק לישראל ניתן להצילור בנפשו קל וחומר בפיקוח נפש שדוחה את השבת.
Okay, so what is that answer? What's his, what pasuk is he quoting? What context?
So he quotes a verse from Shmot when they are talking about a thief who is intending to rob someone or to break into a house.
Mm-hmm, right, he's tunneling. Machtaris, he's in a tunnel breaking into a house. Yeah. And what's the halacha? What can you do in that situation if someone's breaking into your house?
According to the Torah, you're allowed to kill this person.
Right. Tu kava meis eino damim. If he gets killed, there's no blood. There's no guilt.
Mm-hmm. Right. And they ask, so what is the meaning of this? And they say that safek al mamon, so financial doubts come along with doubts of life.
Right, meaning is this person breaking in? Does he just want to rob you? He just wants to take your mamon, your money? Or does he want to kill you? So it's a safek, you're not sure. And still, you're allowed to kill him. Right, why? Why are you allowed to kill the tunneler? In order to preserve your own life. So we see that pikuach nefesh overrides murder. Or murder, maybe killing, we should say, right? Pikuach nefesh overrides killing, and killing is very severe, right? That causes tumah in the world. Killing someone is very bad, and yet we're allowed to do it to save our life. So what do we learn out from here?
Therefore, we learn that it's also allowed to save a life on Shabbos.
Right. If you can kill to save a life, you can also violate Shabbos to save a life. What's sort of an inherent challenge with this drasha, a little bit?
I guess in one case we're talking about your own life, and in a case of pikuach nefesh b'Shabbat, you usually talk about someone else's.
So that's an interesting question. I mean, pikuach nefesh, you certainly can do pikuach nefesh on Shabbos for your own life as well, but it also applies to others. But I think machteres is actually a little not fully clear whether machteres is classically talking about the person only in the house or even others. So I think that's sort of an open question. One of the sources is going to say that it applies to a third party, and that's sort of what's unique about it. But yeah, that's an interesting question to raise. But what I think there's like a... The drasha itself has a bit of a gap, meaning what? Meaning, think about the logic. Yeah, Dvora.
I mean, me and Atara were just not sure about like the logical step between saying like, oh, you can kill someone who's like attacking you, and then saying, oh, and killing is really bad, and then saying so you must be able to violate Shabbos. Like the ranking over there is a little bit ambiguous.
Meaning what? You're saying that murder, that killing being more severe than violating Shabbos is not clear?
Yeah, I mean, like, this guy maybe is, like, a road rape. It's, like, it's not really just, like, plain killing. So, you know, how do you know that it's worse to do that than violate Shabbos?
Right. I think so. I think take that a step further. Remember the Rashi we did earlier in the parak, right? That if, you know, that murder actually is not docheh pikuach nefesh. Remember that? So, right, shvichas dam does not override pikuach nefesh. Why? Rashi says, because you're not actually saving any lives. At the end of the day, you don't die, someone else dies. That's not pikuach nefesh. You're not, you know, the numbers are the same at the end of the day. So why can't we use a similar, I think that's what you're getting at, right? It's like a similar issue here. Like, how are you saving any lives? Now, you might say, well, this person's life doesn't count because they're a rodef, right? So killing a rodef forfeits their right to life or something like that, right? So killing them isn't really killing because they've broken into your house and they're trying to kill you, or they're potentially trying to kill you. But if you say that, and I think this is what Dvorah said, right? If killing a rodef doesn't count as killing, well, then where's your kal v'chomer? Then if you can kill a rodef, which doesn't actually count as killing, to save a life, and killing is really bad, wait, but this isn't murder. This is not, you didn't do anything wrong by killing the rodef. The rodef forfeits their right to life, right? So
are you saving yourself?
Like, you are saving yourself, but what aveira are you doing?
You're doing shvichas damim. So if you're doing
shvichas if you're doing shvichas damim to save yourself, it's not mutter, right? So it can't really be shvichas damim, because that's not mutter.
Well, it's like kedoma shvichas damim. So it's like you could kill someone that's coming to your house to kill you on Shabbat to save yourself. How much more so could you save somebody who's not, like, in a situation that's not life-threatening to yourself?
Right. I mean, so I think the answer has to be something like similar to what Golda is saying, that you sort of have to try to bridge the gap and say it's not quite murder because it's mutter, but it's similar enough to murder, or maybe there's no avera of murder, but there still is an act of killing that happens for the purposes of pikuach nefesh. You have to somehow bridge that gap. I just wanted to point to it. I didn't find any sources that talk about it explicitly, but it just seems like it's a pretty jarring problem. So I thought it was worth mentioning. Yeah, I think you have to say something in that direction to bridge the gap. But there is a real problem here. Either it's murder and then it's usser, or it's not murder, and then there's no kal v'chomer. So you have to somehow thread that needle. What other question can we ask on Rabbi Yishmael? More on Rabbi Yishmael, the person, than on the logic. What do we know about Rabbi Yishmael about pikuach nefesh and drashos? Is there a hand somewhere? Sorry. No? Rivka?
Is he the one who said that, like, Avodah Zarah, like, Pikuach Nefesh is Docha Avodah Zarah?
Yeah. Yeah, that's Rabbi Yishmael in Sanhedrin, the Sugya in Sanhedrin that we saw last week. It's Adaf Ayin Dal. And actually, the source 16, the Tosefta Yom Kippurim, quotes this. He says, Rabbi Yishmael, Svirle, Afilu Ba'akum, Yavar Val Yeharig, Mishun Mechziv, V'chai Bahem. Right? He has only the big two. Gilu Arayos and Shvichas Damim, but not Avodah Zarah. Avodah Zarah, you don't give up your life. You violate Avodah Zarah rather than give up your life, based on V'chai Behem. So what is going on here? Rabbi Yishmael is very into V'chai Behem. He darshins V'chai Behem as his source for giving up, for violating Avodah Zarah to save your life. Why can't he use V'chai Behem for Shabbos? Why does he need to come up with a different drasha, and only Shmuel, generations later, says, oh, I have this new idea of V'chai Behem. How did Rabbi Yishmael not think of V'chai Behem? It's very weird. No, what do people think?
Are you not allowed to use two different principles from the same proof?
Would it be two different principles?
Well, kind of, because Avodah Zarah, well, I thought that there was like an inherent contradiction, because with Avodah Zarah, you're inherently not Chai Behem. Like, the Chai Behem means you should live by them. That's why your Rabbi Yishmael doesn't make sense, meaning you should live by Hashem's mitzvahs and his commandments. If you're doing Avodah Zarah, you're inherently not living by Hashem.
But anytime you do an Avera, while you're doing the Avera, you're not following the Torah, right?
But it's like, in essence, it's completely different, because it's like going against monotheism, which is
okay. So fine, so that there's an argument to be made there. That's why most people hold Avodah Zarah Zahar Val Yavar, but Rabbi Yishmael says it's not. Rabbi Yishmael obviously thinks it's not Yavar Val Yavar, because if you're doing one Avera for the purposes of saving your life, it's okay. And if he says that about Avodah Zarah, why can't he say about Shabbos? It's the same exact principle, which is one Avera, that's not the big two, does not make you, you don't have to give up your life for that, right? So why wouldn't he have why wouldn't he just extend it? Was there, Dvorah, did you have your hand up? No, someone else? Yeah?
Yes, okay. Now, I was like, I don't have my hand up about this, but having them, okay, fine, yes. I was thinking maybe he wants something Shabbos-specific.
Okay.
Here.
Why?
Not sure.
So
I mean, we were just struck by how, like, the only one that was not Shabbos-specific was Shmuel's, which is the one that stands.
Yeah, that's an important point. We'll get to that in a bit. But yeah, maybe something Shabbos-specific. It could be. Tehillah, do you have a suggestion?
Yeah, I'm not really sure how to resolve it, but just comparing the two cases, I think one is willingly submitting. Well, one is actively causing yourself to die, and the other one is much more passive, as in stopping a body from dying that is already dying.
So you're saying Avodah Zarah, he's saying you actively do something to save your life, whereas Pikuach,
you do something to stop someone from killing you.
Right.
As opposed, like, you know, someone is actually going to come and end your life, as opposed to if the lima being strong enough that, like, if you're in the process of dying but not, you know, definitely dead or dying, that you can prevent that from happening.
Uh-huh. But why, I mean, at the end of the day, if the drasha is v'chai b'hem, like, do whatever you need to do to preserve your life, with two exceptions, why would there be a difference between whether someone was attacking you or not?
Right.
So there's the...
Well, in both cases, is it really the mitzvah that's killing them?
Doesn't matter. Why does it matter if it's the mitzvah that's killing them? The point is, v'chai b'hem, you can do whatever you need. You can do whatever aver you need to save your life, whatever the reason is, whatever the reason you're in danger
is. What if the drasha is that the mitzvahs are supposed to let you live? So that if, you know, not doing a avodah zarah gets you killed... Well, I guess in both cases, they get you killed... I don't know. I guess maybe, I thought maybe it might have something to do with the directness of it. But.
Yeah, it's an interesting direction. I think for other distinctions in terms of ones, defining ones, it may come into play, but I don't see it here. The sources 16 and 17 are two achronim who raised this question. The Gvuras Ari, source 17, suggests that sort of the flip side of what Dvor was suggesting. Not that he needs two drachas, not that he needs the extra one for Shabbos, but he needs the extra one for Avodah Zarah. Meaning, you know, sort of you need a super drasha to teach Avodah Zarah, because that's one of the big three. So, you know, you have a basic drasha that he says about Machteres, and that teaches you Shabbos, and that teaches you all sorts of other things that you can do big averas to save life. But to teach Avodah Zarah, that's such a big avera that he needs a new drasha for that. Okay, it could be. Not the most convincing thing, because then why not just use the super big drasha for everything, right? But somehow that was the thought of the Gros Ari. The Tosfos Yom Kippurim has a different angle that I think is more conceptually interesting, which is, he suggests, Yesh Lomar, this is the fourth line in Source 16, Yesh Lomar, the Sfirlei, the Rabbi Yishmael, to me, V'chai B'hem, Ein Raya, Ela La'adam Atzmo, Amal Sheichal Shabbos, Yisrael ze be'ad chavero lo shamanu. Ulekach maisi la meha debabim achteres. So, dolomi bayi, ba'al bayi, siyach lo hargo, afilu achir yach lo hargo. His logic is like this. V'chai b'hem is talking to you, right? This is the Torah that Asher Yaseh Osem ha'adam v'chai b'hem. This is what a person does, and they live by them. V'chai b'hem v'lo shiyamas b'hem. And when a person keeps the Torah, they should live by it and not die by it. That's only talking to the person who's sick themselves. The person who's sick themselves can violate Shabbos, because v'chai b'hem. It doesn't say anything, this is the Torah, Shiyaseh Osem Ha'adam, you know, and someone else should be v'chai b'hem. It's that you do this and you live by it. Not that you do it, you do it and someone else will live by it, right? So since, based on that, based on v'chai b'hem, we only know that you're allowed to violate something yourself, Avodah Zarah, for example, yourself, to save your own life. But we don't know that someone else can violate the Torah to save your life. And that's why we need the new drasha from Baba Machteres, which again, as I said, this is a little controversial, but you know, Hadassah mentioned before, sort of the flip side, that Baba Machteres, even a third party can jump in and kill. So if I see someone, if I'm next door neighbor, I see someone tunneling into my neighbor's house, I can stop, I can shoot dead the tunneler to save their life. So just like that's the case, a third party can do that. So too, by Pikuach Nefesh on Shabbos, a third party can violate Shabbos to save the person's life. That's the answer of the Tzefes Yom Kippurim, which is important in the sense that it, you know, it says that this is the first drasha that really shows that anyone can do it, not just the person who's sick themselves, but even a third party. Whereas other drashas may get it from elsewhere, Rabbi Shmuel gets it from here. So that's a couple of ways of resolving that issue. Let's go on in the Gemara. Do we have another volunteer? Or should I volunteer someone?
I could read.
Okay, go for it, Zahava. Yeah.
Just remind me where to leave off.
Nana Rebbe Akiva. Second to last line.
Nana Rebbe Akiva Ba'amar. Dechi Yazid Ish Al Re'eo V'gomer. So Rebbe Akiva answers and says, this is a source from Shemot Chaf Aleph, that's what Torah Or says. This is talking about like when a, what does that mean? When a man does something to his friend.
Yeah, to Yazid is to be mazed, to be intentional. Lehargoba arma, that's the continuation, to kill them by trickery. So I mean, if someone lies in wait with a plan to kill their friend, or not such close friend apparently, you even take someone like that off the Mizbeach to give them, to kill them, to give them the death penalty. That's what it, that's what pshat in the pasuk means, yeah?
The im is bechi, I guess, like with, from with the mizbeach, below me al mizbechi, so not on the mizbeach.
Right.
So that was where Rashi was saying that if it was a Kohen who was involved in the avoda,
yeah,
that he would let the Kohen finish the avoda before killing him.
So the way we're going to take this is we're going to Gemara here understands it's not about killing him. That's pshat in the pasuk. The Gemara understands it's not about killing him. It's about using this person for a testimony to kill someone. So you would take the person away for a testimony, to give testimony, if they're me'im mizbechi, if they're by the mizbeach, but not if they're on the mizbeach. They actually started the avoda, then you don't stop them. You let them finish the avoda first before calling them in. Okay.
Amar Rabba Bar Chana Amar. So Rabba says that Amar says. Amar Rabbi Yochanan. That Rabbi Yochanan says. Lo shanu ela lahamit aval hachayot afilu mi'al mizbechi. So it's not teaching whether it's to kill someone, but rather it's in order to preserve someone's life, in order to save someone.
Meaning what testimony is this person giving? Are they going to give testimony that I saw A person A kill person B? That's not only that, but even if they, that in that case, only if they're not doing the avoda, right? But if it's lahachios, if they're going to testify that person A didn't kill person B or something like that, then even if they're in the middle of the avoda, you stop it right then and there to save the life of the person, yeah?
And what is this or like this? So safek yesh mamash b'devarav, safek ein mamash b'devarav. Okay, so that there's a safek that is like specifically with his words, or I guess specifically what he's going to say, and a safek what he's not going to say.
So this is like a formulation of safek A, safek B. It's one doubt. It's a doubt whether A or B, right? So it's safek. It's a doubt as to whether this person has any substance or not. When they, you know, when they get up and they say, "Oh yeah, I heard a rumor that so and so did this." That's worthless in Bezdin, right? So he may actually have real edus. He may just, you know, have something worthless. We don't know. It's a suffix. And still, we're willing to stop the avoda in order to have this person suffix testify to save someone's life.
Right. So it says avoda docha Shabbos and the avoda. Okay. Yeah. So that's that limud, and then it's adding to it and says avoda docha Shabbos, and just like the avoda can like push off Shabbos. So too, pikuach nefesh also has the ability to push off Shabbos.
Right, it's like a kal v'chomer, right? So if pikuach nefesh, saving someone's life in court, is stronger than avod in the mikdash, and avod in the mikdash, which you do on Shabbos, right? You shecht animals on Shabbos over and burn them, overrides Shabbos. So kal v'chomer that pikuach nefesh is stronger than Shabbos, right?
Now, Rabbi Elazar of Amar. So Rabbi Elazar answers and says, "Uma mila sheyachad mimatayim farvaim ushmona ivarim sheva adam." So now Rabbi Elazar is comparing the situation to Brit Mila. So just like Brit Mila, which is one body part out of 248 limbs or body parts of a person, docha et hashabbos. So Brit Mila can violate Shabbat. Kavachomer, so too, any...
Well, not so too, all the more so, right? Kavachomer, all the more so, right? Yeah?
All the more so, the rest of the body can push off Shabbos.
Okay, and how exactly does this work? What does it mean? Like, what is the connection between Right, the Kal V'chomer is one limb versus 248 limbs. Great. Okay, that I understand. But where does Pikuach Nefesh come in with Bris Milah?
So Rashi adds it. So Rashi says that if you don't give a Bris Milah, then the person is Chayav Kari.
Okay, and therefore?
Therefore, by giving a Bris Milah, you are saving their life in the future.
Right, and the assumption is that Kares, right, which is like a halachic punishment of excision, which leads to one of various things, Kares counts as if you're dead, essentially. Right? So by saving the baby from Kares, you're saving the baby's life. It's Pikuach Nefesh, because you're saving the baby's life. It's a big chiddush, but you know, maybe the best way to read the Gemara. So that's the way Rashi takes it. Some of the Mefarshim give alternative explanations. Rabbeinu Hananel, for example, which I put as source 20 on the sheet, has a slightly different take. I don't know if anyone saw it. Rabbeinu Hananel is pretty out there. He says, "Matzanu shehamal tinok matzilam namisa." We find that someone who gives a baby a bris saves the baby from death. May Eliezer beno shel Moshe Rabbeinu. Right, this is a story in the Torah. And you know that Moshe was traveling on the road, and someone met them and wanted to kill them. He wanted to kill the baby. So the baby's mother, Moshe's wife, didn't give a bris right away. Maybe Moshe also didn't, but fine. He says the mother didn't give a bris, and this angel, malach, was sent to kill the baby. Right, what happens in the Torah? She gives them bris, calls him chasan damim, whatever exactly that means. Very cryptic psukim there. The point is, then he went away from me. So the way he understands it, whether call it a malach, call it a disease, those may or may not be the same thing. There was, because the baby wasn't given a bris in a timely manner, his life was in danger. Giving the baby the bris is actually directly pikuach nefesh, not from spiritual death, kares, but from literal physical death that, you know, sometimes people get if you don't give a bris, as we see from Eliezer. That's pretty intense, right? But that's Rabbi Hananel's view, and that avoids Rashi's assumption that kares is the same as death, right? You could have easily said, wait, okay, so you can do a bris to save yourself from kares. So is that the same as saving yourself from death? Maybe it's just different. How can those be comparable? How does your Kal V'chomer work? So that he avoids that problem here. I'll just mention quickly the Rosh Hashanah in source 21 raises a different question, he says v'gam eno vada kol kach she'im yamo l'machar u'yoma achra yiftor gam kein mikares. Right, Rashi says, well, this baby is pikuach nefesh because it stands to get kares, but the Rosh Hashanah says, okay, so give the baby kares like tomorrow. Give the baby a bris, rather, tomorrow, or maybe tonight. Right? What's the big rush is the baby gets kares right away, and there's a whole long discussion as to how you get kares for bris. Is it at the end of your life, if you never had a bris, you get kares? You get kares at every moment that you don't have a bris. If it's a kid, the kid doesn't get kares until they become an adult, and they're responsible. All these different views about that. So that's complicated. Rashi seems to have the view that either that the kares is immediate, if you miss the eighth day, which seems pretty intense, pretty severe, or maybe that we're worried that you won't get around to it. So it's pikuach nefesh, because you might forget, you might not get around to it. To do the bris, so you have to do it now. In any event, it's a challenging Rashi, but it's a big chiddush of sorts. Was there a question? Was there another? I thought there was maybe another angle to take. I don't know if this works or not. And I didn't see it anywhere, but I also, I didn't look as extensively. But another way maybe the Gemara might work would be to say, a bris isn't pikuach nefesh, but bris is the perfection, the redemption of one limb of a person, right? So the arla, there's something fundamentally problematic, and by giving a bris, that's how that part of the body is redeemed, is sort of made whole, is ironically, or is made proper. And if fixing one part of the body is doche shavis, then kal v'chomer, fixing the whole body, namely pikuach nefesh, is also doche shavus. I thought there was maybe room to read that into the drasha as the logic for it that would avoid some of the challenges facing Rashi. But I see Tehila and Rivka both have thoughts on that. So Tehila, what do you think?
I mean, at first that's what I thought, because Rashi says that it's mipnei tikunei berav. But in that case, that would give permission for like any medical procedure whatsoever, regardless of whether there's sakana, which maybe would support our Gemara from yesterday, but it just seems difficult.
Right. That's, you're saying the problem is the drush would be too strong. The drush would be too strong to allow it.
I mean, it might be great because it would include sakana, but it seems like it would include any medical procedure.
Right. So you have to say something like maybe bris is definitional in some way. You know, there's all these midrashim about, you know, that's like the same way that we take grain and make it into bread, and that's a way of perfecting a person by doing a bris. That's a way of perfecting the person. You could say it's more than just one limb. If you want to minimize it for the Kavachomer, you say it's one limb, but really it's a definitional limb or something like that.
The only way, I guess, to ground it would be that instead of, you know, if it's one, then two is better than one, and three is better than one, and four is better than one, then only 248 is better than one, and only if it keeps the entire body intact and stops it from dying, then it's fine. But it just,
That's a fair point. That is a weakness of the drasha. Okay, Rivka and Zoe quickly, and then we're going to go into hyperspeed mode to finish. Yeah.
Yeah, I was just going to say that I have, like, in the parak of Shabbos, it talks about Mila. They actually do talk about Mila, like, as, like, a tikkun, like, a way to fix the whole child, because it brings the whole child into, like, Kali Yisrael and into Mitzvot. So there are, like, a number of sources that, like, support that explanation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's, like, sort of the bridge, you know, going back to Tila's question, the bridge between it's one limb, yes, but it's sort of a definitional part of the body, that's why, you know, you can make a kal v'chomer to pikuach nefesh, but you can't make a kal v'chomer to other things, something like that. Okay, Zoe.
Rivka covered it, although I did think of her commentators that spoke against the understanding of this Brit on Shabbat as tikkun, because it is a problem to perfect on Shabbat.
Right, and yet we override that. Right, and that you have a gzeres akasa, right? The pasuk says, "V'yom hashmini yumal," you do it on the eighth day. B'shmini afilu b'shabbos b'darshin. Okay. Let's go into warp speed, if that's okay with everyone. I'll try to be clear. I'll pick up the reading. Fine. Rabbi Yossi bar Yehuda Omer, a new drasha. As Shamsosai Tishmoru, Yachol Akol, Tamad Omer, Ach Chali. Right, the Pasuk says, Ach is Shamsosai Tishmoru, but you should keep my Shabbos. Usually when we have a Ach, something like, we say like, but, that means not everything. You don't always keep Shabbos. You keep Shabbos most of the time. When do you not keep Shabbos? Pikuach Nefesh. That's his drasha. Rabbi Yonasan ben Yosef Amar Ki Kodesh Hilachem. He misur biyedchem velo atem misurim biyada. Right, keep Shabbos because it's Kodesh Hilachem. Shabbos is for you, and then it says it is given over into your hands. You are not given over into its hands, which is an interesting metaphor. I think being given over into someone's hands is usually a military term, right? Like you get killed in battle, you're given over into their hands, like they control you, and. Interestingly, Shabbos is in our hands. We control Shabbos rather than Shabbos controlling us. That's the language. That's what the words Misurim Biedchem means. Masur Biedchem means, right? So it's an interesting idea, an interesting way of thinking about it, that it's almost like the battle is not between Averos and Pikuach Nefesh. It's like the battle is between Shabbos and us, or we sort of abstracted a level, and we're in power. We are empowered over Shabbos, rather than Shabbos being empowered over us. Obviously within reason, within a certain set of rules. But our lives don't need to be given up for Shabbos, right? We don't need to be Moser, our Nefesh, Misurim Biyadchem, we don't need to be Moser Nefesh for Shabbos purposes. Fine, and now another Shabbos-related drasha. If you notice, the first three drashos were like other area of halacha, kal v'chomer to Shabbos. The next three are Shabbos-specific. Rabbi Shimon ben Nasi Omer v'shamar b'nei Yisrael as Shabbos. Amar Torah chal of Shabbos achas k'dei sheyishmar Shabbos as harbe. This is maybe the second most important drasha on the list. It says v'shamar b'nei Yisrael as Shabbos lasos as Shabbos. The Jews keep the Shabbos. Why do they keep the Shabbos? In order lasos as Shabbos, to keep the Shabbos in the future. You only keep Shabbos if it's for the purposes of being able to continue to keep Shabbos. If keeping this Shabbos will prevent you from keeping future Shabboses, you're not obligated to keep it. Chal of Shabbos achas, violate one Shabbos to keep many more Shabboses. It's a Shabbos investment, right? Sacrifice one for the greater Shabbos good. Amar Bihuda Amar Shmuel, Ihavai Hasam, Shmuel said, I wasn't there because I'm a couple hundred years later. If I was there, Hava Mina Didi Adifa Midihu, I have a better drasha, V'chai Be'am Lo Shiyamas Bahem, right? As we've spoken about previously, this is the Torah that you should live by and not die by. All these approaches have a way of undermining them, except for Shmuel's, which has no pircha. You can't undermine Shmuel's. It's the best drasha. It sounds like we go with it. That's why, if you saw on the sheet, both the Rush and the Rif and the Rambam quote V'chai Behem as the source. Right? Sources 8, 9, and 10, they all quote V'chai Behem. And we're going to talk in a second why it matters how we paskin, but that seems pretty clear that this is how we paskin. Fine. And then we go through some of the questions that we have. The Rishmal, Dilma Kidarava, the Amar Rava, my time in the Machteris, the Zakin of the Mabinat Mamona, the High Me, the Yazakaya Ape, the Amar Yikala Ape, Katilale, the Tomar Balhargashkin, the Hargo, the Ashkan Vadai. Fine. So the issue with Rabbi Shmuel Svara is maybe that's not really Suffolk. We're trying to learn out Suffolk as well. Maybe that only teaches you Vadai because we have a real chazaka, a real presumption that someone breaking into your house is willing to kill. So maybe that wouldn't teach Suffolk. Ashkan Vadai speaking to me, Rabbi Kiva, Nami, Dilma, Kidabai, the Rabbi Masrinale, Zuga, the Rabbanan, Leda, Imam Shudrav. So maybe Rabbi Kiva is also, according to the view that we bring someone to figure out if this person actually has Edus before we take him off from his bath, that would also only teach a case of Vadai, not a case of Suffolk, so it's limited. Ashkan Vadai Suffolk Minalan. The Kula Ashkan Vadai Suffolk Minalan. Right, in all the cases, you don't really learn out Suffolk. With the Shmuel Vadai Leisle Pircha. Fine. Amar Avina Vitim Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak Tavachada Pilpulsa Charifa Mi Malei Tzina Dekari. Better one sharp pepper than an entire basket of gourds, of, I don't know, squash, something like that. So, this is the Bavli's culinary advice. Take it or leave it. But the point is, for our purposes, that Shmuel has the best drasha. You can have six other drashos. They all have the same problem. They're all not sharp enough. They're all not, you know, they're all not sufficient. Shmuel's is the sharpest. It gets the job done. And that's presumably why the Rush and the Rif and the Rambam paskin like Shmuel. Why does it matter who we paskin like? What are the differences between these views? So one thing that I think Dvorah mentioned before is that some of these are Shabbos, most of these are Shabbos specific. Either they come from elsewhere and then darshan it through Shabbos, or they darshan straight from Shabbos. Only Shmuel's drasha is general. It's more general. So maybe it's better just because it's general, right? I mean, aside from not having these problems, maybe we possibly like it because it has the greatest explanatory power. It can work in all areas of halacha. That makes some sense. We're going to see other nafkaminas, other distinctions between the drashos. One fascinating point that someone made, because some achronim asked the question, well, if Shmuel's drasha is so good, why didn't everyone say it? Right? Why did it take all the Tanaim, who all had reasons, they're all bad. They all gave bad answers, and Shmuel gave a good answer. Really? Is that how you understand the Gemara? More like, why wouldn't the Tanaim have thought of Shmuel's answer? So the Tzlach, source 24, has this very interesting idea that he said, maybe, according to everyone else, not according to Shmuel, but according to everyone else, they don't give Shmuel's reason of V'chai Behem, because where is V'chai Behem stated? It's talking the Parsha of Arayos. It's after the Torah was given, going through some of the halachos, then you have this pasuk of V'chai Behem. But when was Shabbos taught? The mitzvah of Shabbos, we were told, or Sham Samla, Chokumishma, V'sham Yisrael, was taught at Mara. They learned the din of Shabbos at Mara. So Shabbos was commanded before this idea of V'chai Behem existed. So if you want to prove to me that Pikuach Nefesh is Doche Shabbos, you need to give me a pasuk about Shabbos, not something about the dinim that were afterwards. Maybe V'chai Behem only applies for whatever other dinim, for Araya, for, you know, well, not Arayos, but for other areas of the Torah that were taught at Sinai, that were taught later, but not to include Shabbos. That's the Tzlach suggestion. Everyone else thinks Shabbos wouldn't be included. That's why they darshan from elsewhere for Shabbos. Shmuel says, no, we can throw in Shabbos too, to this drasha, and that's why he darshans from there. Fine. Let's put that aside, and let's build on this distinction between Shabbos drashos, Shabbos specific drashos, versus Shmuel's general, more general drasha. One way of thinking about it is within Shmuel's view, V'chai Behem is really about a clash. We have violating Shabbos is usser. We have the value of human life. They clash. Value of human life wins out, and you violate Shabbos. That might fit with an idea of dechuya. Right, Shabbos is still pushing back. Whereas the other drushos that are actually internal to Shabbos, things like, you know, Achas Shabbos Osei Tishmoru, but not if it's Pikuach Nefesh, that means that the very mitzvah of keeping Shabbos has a built-in exception for Pikuach Nefesh. So it's not Dechuya that they're clashing, it's Hutra, right? Keep Shabbos, Pikuach Nefesh, Shabbos says, okay, I'm not relevant anymore. There's no Shabbos in the face of Pikuach Nefesh. So maybe that's one distinction among these drushos, is Hutra versus Dechuya. Alternatively, the question of Chal Olav Shabbos Achas, which we saw, which is important, might have certain chumras and certain kulas, as opposed to the other, the drasha of achai behem, let's say. They did chalav Shabbos achas, and this comes back a little bit to what we spoke about before about tchai sha'a, right? When you say violate this Shabbos to keep more Shabbosos, what is the value that we're working with, right? On the one hand, don't violate Shabbos. On the other hand, what? Yeah, Dvorah?
So that you can keep more.
So on the other hand, lots of Shabboses, right? So it's one Shabbos versus many Shabboses. So I don't know, it's like this. I don't know exactly how you'd, right? So it wins out, paper beats rock. But what's the, but at the end of the day, are we actually working with Pikuach Nefesh per se? Is the human life itself what's valued? Or is what's valued something else? In this case, keeping Shabbos down the line. Now, if you say literally, all we care about is keeping Shabbos down the line, you're going to find a lot of nafkaminas, right? For example, let's say this person doesn't keep Shabbos. They're not Shabbos observant. So then maybe the din of Pikuach Nefesh wouldn't apply to them. Or let's say it's the person's, if you save their life on Shabbos, they're only going to live for a few days. They won't live till next Shabbos. So then maybe it doesn't apply. There's no Chal Shabbos Achas. So there's a variety of ways, or let's say they're a Cheresh or a Shota. The Minchas Chinuch mentions this. They may not have the halachic capacity to keep Shabbos. So if they can't keep Shabbos, then maybe you shouldn't save their life. That would be implied by this drush of Chal Shabbos Achas. Whereas if you save a Chai Behem, where the actual value is human life itself, then in all those cases, presumably the human life, the life of this Yehudi has value anyway, and it would override Shabbos. So that's one important nafkamina where Chal Shabbos Achas is actually a chumrah and has a more limited pikuach nefesh. On the other hand, we saw earlier the Ramban, quoting the Bahag, that actually there's also a kula. There's a more extensive pikuach nefesh case because of Chal Shabbos Achas, which is the case of Ubar, right? A pregnant mother, her life is not in danger. Only the baby's life in danger. Do you do pikuach nefesh? Well, if you assume a baby is not a life, like the Ramban is assuming there's no human life. So v'chai behem wouldn't apply. But what would apply is Chal Shabbos Achas. Because this baby is not a life. It's not yet born. According to that view, it's not a life. It's a potential life. It's a future life. And guess what? In its future life, this fetus will keep Shabbos as a person. So Chal Shabbos Achas could apply. And in fact, that's what the Ramban actually quotes. He quotes Chal Shabbos Achas, not V'chai Behem, because V'chai Behem wouldn't apply, whereas Chal Shabbos Achas would apply. And one last extension from another case where Chal Shabbos Achas is a kula, is a more expansive heter, maybe, is a case that the Rashba discusses, where you have, let's say, one of your children is being kidnapped by the government, by whatever it is, they're going to kidnap the kid and make them not frum. You're not worried about your child's physical safety, you're worried about their spiritual well-being. You're worried they become not frum. So the Rashba says maybe, the Beis Yosef rejects this, and there's a whole discussion about it, but the Rashba says maybe we should apply Chal Shabbos Achas, K'deishim Shabbos Harbe. Violate Shabbos to save your kid from being kidnapped. That way your kid can keep Shabbos in the future. Not next week, because they're still a katan. In the future, when they're grown up, they'll keep Shabbos, and you're allowed to violate Shabbos for that. It doesn't matter if there's no human life at stake. Pikuach Nefesh, it's not really Pikuach Nefesh, it's about Chal Shabbos Achas. It's a Shabbos consideration rather than a human life consideration. So I think there's a lot of very important and very interesting nafkaminas here between two issues. Number one, the Shabbos drashos versus V'chai Behem, where the Shabbos drashos are maybe hutra, V'chai Behem maybe duchuya, although not necessarily, but maybe. And then on the other hand, comparing Chal Shabbos Achas to all the other drashos, where Chal Shabbos Achas is not weighing the value of human life per se, it's weighing the value of more Shabbos, right? It's a Shabbos versus Shabbos. It's an internal Shabbos consideration, and that both has certain chumrah, certain limitations. It wouldn't apply to people who don't keep Shabbos or can't keep Shabbos or won't make it to next Shabbos. On the other hand, it's a kula because it applies not only to life, but to potential life, and not only to, and even to a case where the person won't die. Their spiritual life will be lost. That can be included under Chal Shabbos Achas as well. One last point about Chal Shabbos Achas. We've been assuming it's focused on Shabbos. This is not clear. Some people think that Chal Shabbos Achas doesn't mean only Shabbos. It means Kadesh Yishmer Shabbos Harbe. They think it means to keep many mitzvos in general. Shabbos Harbe is just an example, right? Violate one Shabbos, keep more Shabbos. It really means violate one Shabbos to keep the rest of the mitzvos, to keep the rest of the Torah. And And in that case, that would a case where you wouldn't make it to the next Shabbos. You still would make it. You still would be alive to do other things, to say vidui, for example, to tie into our chayisha, to do other things. That might be a reason to allow. That might be a reason to allow pikuach nefesh there as well.